So we would like to thank Yitz and Sue and Penny and Leah Elman all for co-sponsoring tonight's Sheer Beer and Barbecue, Le'ilui Nishmas, and in honor of the upcoming Shloshim of their father Yaakov Ben Yitzchak Zatzal, Professor Yaakov Elman. And what I would like to do this evening is share with you an idea that I've been developing since I took the course with him this past semester, something that he mentioned in passing, and then on the ride back when I came with him home with Penny once, I asked him for sources on this, and he jotted down a whole bunch of sources that I should look into, basically verbatim, of articles that he's written and other things to look into. And from that, this sheer has percolated my mind, and thank you all for giving me the opportunity now to share some of those ideas. So what the concept, the main concept and the starting point, is that there's this idea that's floated around without any analysis, but just taken for granted, of Yiridas Hadoros. Yiridas Hadoros, that the world people either will see on a moral level or as an intellectual level have been going downhill, presumably since Matan Torah. Once Matan Torah happened, that was the pinnacle. And everything since then, and the farther we get from Matan Torah, everything is just down.
Slow decline.
Slow decline, depend what angle you're on. But everything's going down. And it's sort of taken for granted in many, many Sfarim, and there are tons of sources we can quote, but we're not going to go into the details of that. We're just going to take a poll if anybody's heard of it before, but we're just taking for granted now that it's a famous, well-known concept that we're going downhill since the time of the giving of the Torah. And again, whether or not that's an intellectual downhill or a moral downhill, we'll see some sources. And as we'll get to towards the end of this year, sort of giving the ending and then moving backwards, is that Professor Elman did not like this idea very much. He thought it was misunderstood. And I'd like to analyze some of the sources that led him to what I believe this conclusion is, and perhaps reflect a little bit on what his life was like because of this schema that he had in his brain, that this isn't supposed to be taken for granted, that we're just getting worse. Rather, there might be actually opportunity that we're actually getting better. So it starts with here, you have source, the first page, chapter 1, Decline of the Generation. So just give you a little bit about what this photocopy is from. This is from a book by Professor Menachem Kellner that's about the Rambam's position on the decline of the generations. In Chazon Nachum, which is the book that was presented to Rabbi Norman Lamb, who we'll also get to a little bit later, at least in passing, on his 70th birthday, which was edited by Professor Elman and Professor Jeffrey Gurak. So in Chazon Nachum, which if you remember, for those of you who were at the Gemara Shir a few weeks ago, we actually did the article from Professor Elman that's in Chazon Nachum. Today we're going to be talking about the article by Menachem Kellner, which is on the decline of the generations in the perspective, or from the perspective of the Rambam. And then that was expanded on, or actually the truth is this chapter was a summary of the book that was coming out at approximately the same time in the 90s at some point. What Professor Kellner basically develops from the beginning in chapter 1 is he quotes through the classic sources that say, that seem to indicate that we are going down. So there is precedent in the Gemara, if read in a certain way, that indicates that we're going downhill. So let's see some of these sources. Look in the first page, chapter 1, Decline of Generations. We'll just read a little bit from the beginning. In traditionalist Jewish circles, the idea that the generations are diminishing has become something of a dogma, assumed and only rarely examined. Right, so everybody believes this. We're going downhill. Skip the quote. The view is so pervasive in the Jewish tradition that even a scholar as sophisticated as Michael Berger can be led to write that, quote, while the basic equality of all intellects is a tenet of the alignment, a theological assumption of continually declining generations is a tenet of Judaism. So with all apologies to Michael Berger, he's the fall guy over here. Apparently he buys into this because it's so prevalent and so well spread that we're going downhill. And then what do you do about the fact that you have somebody like the Vilna Gaon? So there are certain individuals, there are certain exceptions. Really, we're all going downhill But every once in a while, you're thrown an individual who goes counter that and is a great Rishon stuck in an Achron's body, or is a Rishon who's really a Tano stuck in a Rishon's body type of idea, that they're really out of place in time. In the right hand column, page 8, same page, this notion of the doctrine or diminution of the generations is often used to explain the fact of halakhic history, that Amoraim do not dispute Tanaim, Gaonim do not dispute Amoraim, Rishonim do not dispute Gaonim, and Achronim do not dispute Rishonim, because we're worse. How can we dispute people who were better than us? They were so much smarter than us. How can we dispute them? While the connection between the two issues is often associated in rabbinic doctrine, it turns out to have been formulated explicitly for the first time only in the 10th century. And here's Professor Kellner's main point, is that the way that the idea gets encapsulated and formulated and sort of gets stuck in our imaginations as being that there's no choice but downhill is only in the 10th century. If you go back to the primary sources in the Gemara, you will not find it explicitly said anywhere that it's a fact, no choice about it, that we're going downhill. So if you look right slightly on the bottom of that, this first section is where he quotes the Talmudic statements that seem to indicate that we are degenerating to some extent. And each one, just to spoil it a little bit, each one that he's going to quote could be read in that light. And there is, I was a little bit sensational in the topic where I said, I believe, the fallacy of... Yuridas Adoros. So it's not a fallacy in the sense that a part of the idea exists. It's a fallacy in the sense that the way it's used is incorrect, at least according to these scholars. So what are the sources that seem to indicate some level? And as we read them, let's keep a careful analysis as to what exactly are we saying and what perhaps is being added on later on. So there are several passages where it says section 1. There are several passages in the Babylonian and Jerusalem Talmuds which give expression to variants of the idea that later scholars were inferior to earlier scholars. As we shall see, these texts are not clear and certainly not consistent on the nature of the inferiority posited. Thus, here's the first source, Shabbos 112b, we read, Reb Zeira said in Rabba ben Zemuna's name, if the earlier scholars, Rishonim, were sons of angels, we are sons of men. And if the earlier scholars were sons of men, we are like donkeys, I'll just translate it that way, and not even like the donkey of Rabbi China ben Dosa and Pinchas ben Yair, but like ordinary donkeys. So we're not, they're so great, they're awesome, whatever level they are, we are qualitatively a rung down on the, either people or just donkeys. So in this passage, continuing, the earlier scholars remain unnamed, and we are not told how many generations separate the earlier and later scholars. We are also not told in what the superiority of the earlier generations consists, and that's important. How are they so much better? In what areas are they so much better? Continuing here, this is Gittin in the Jerusalem Talmud, Gittin 6-7, the next sectioned off quote, when Rabbi Yehuda Anasi wanted to raise a question about an opinion of Rabbi Yossi, he said, should we inferior folk raise questions about the opinion of Rabbi Yossi? For just as the difference between most holy things and unconsecrated food, so is the difference between our generation and the generation of Rabbi Yossi. So the Rabbi Yossi seems to be indicating that the Rabbi Yossi generation is so much better than our generation. Said Rabbi Yishmael, the son of Rabbi Yossi, who was, partial to the discussion, just as is the difference between gold and dirt, so is the difference between our generation and fathers. Right? So there's they're indicating that there's such a huge difference between the previous generation and our generation. And just think about it, pre-war Europe, so amazing, so awesome. We create this sense that it was so beautiful, and everybody was learning Torah and everybody. But now we're nothing. So it's the same thing back then. They're saying the previous generation was so much better. Flip the page. These are two sources, and there's more. These are two sources that indicate to some extent that the previous generation was better.
But if you look at these two sources, the first one seems to be talking about their intellectual capacity.
Well, he says
scholarship.
He says that's not clear either.
And the second one...
Why do you say that? It says humans to donkeys.
Right. So the first one is the difference between human and donkey.
Usually when you call people a donkey, it's because of their moral character, not because of their intellectual character.
Well, no. I think the difference between a donkey and a human being between an animal and a human being is their ability to understand and perceive. But in the second one, the difference between dirt and gold, that's already... that's not a that seems to be
I hear what you're saying. I would say he's definitely going with the idea, and I sort of agree that at least it's an option to read this way. Is that it's unclear which one they're talking about. They're talking about worth. They're talking about intellect. They could be talking about both. On both statements could be read in either way.
Is he talking about the strength? Because is he talking about physicality? Because there's also a Gemara that talks about
physical
standing.
Strength. Right. So here he doesn't talk about physical strength.
Because sit now while learning, but really he's supposed to stand.
So that's a good point. He doesn't here address that directly. I don't believe, unless I just didn't quote it. But basically, what we have here is just as a setup point, and we'll continue. We'll see Rabbi Professor Kellner shortly. But we have as a.
Want to stand in the middle, so you're like.
What we have as a starting point is that there is this concept that seems to be rooted in sources, but to the what extent are we going to extend it, and to what extent are we going to apply it? So here now, if you go to the, I believe it's your next page. I have a little bit of a different thing here. Sorry, here, use this one for a second. So go to the second page, not the second side, the second page. So the top of the page in the left-hand side says tradition. It says tradition. Okay, so it's the second page, not the second side, the second full page. And the top of the page says tradition.
Oh, tradition.
Tradition, okay. So page 4 and 5 on the bottom. So this is taken from Professor Elman's article, one of the earlier articles that he wrote. Back in the 80s, on Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin. This was printed in Tradition, Journal of Orthodox Thought. And here he takes up the idea where he basically starts like Professor Kellner and says that, if you look here on the bottom left-hand page, bottom left-hand side of the left-hand page, last paragraph, another doctrine has a bearing on our problem, the dogma of devolution of the species, niktanu adoros. In its least sophisticated form, this refers to physical degeneration. So there you go, Nachman. So there could be some level of physical degeneration. Biblical figures are pictured as literally larger than life. Other versions emphasize the moral, spiritual, and intellectual decadence of later generations. It is a simple matter to account for a defective transmission of the oral Torah in the context of such a process. Needless to say, however, the doctrine is open to the same objection raised above, and there's context there that we're obviously starting in the middle, so we're not going to get as of right now. But he introduces the point here that there's an element of the generations going down, 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 down. Is it physical? Is it intellectual? Is it spiritual? Is it moral? Now the right-hand column. The subject of this paper and the historiosophy of Rav Tzadok of Lublin allows for a process of progressive revelation which adheres to the letter of the devolutionary law. And I'll explain this in a second. Rav Tzadok suggests an alternative solution of the historical problems we enumerated above. Lack of evidence for an early oral law, positive evidence from deviations from Allah in biblical times, the problem of Tanaitic controversy, again, there's more context there. But what Professor Elman is basically setting up for the rest of the paper, at least for the part that we're going to see now, is that according to Rav Tzadok, this is not true. According to Rav Tzadok, part of it might be true, there might be elements of it that have truth to it, but as a whole, to say that we're automatically going downhill can't be true. And the reason why it can't be true according to Rav Tzadok is because it goes against his whole philosophy of how life and religious life is supposed to be lived. And how our revelation, if you remember from the shiur that we gave on Shabbos a few weeks ago, is that the process of Torah Shebaal Peh, of me and you and everybody else inputting into divine law, as it were, itself shows that it can't just be that Torah Shebichsav, you know, Sinai is it, and then we're done. There has to be some level of progression, some level of going up. So in the next paragraph, you can read this on your own, it gives you a little bit of historical background to who Rav Tzadok was. And now if you flip the page, this is a continuation.
Do you want to park in the hydrant? Because I think there's a fire coming up, right?
I don't think there's a hydrant.
What's
there.
Your car
back? My hydrant's over there.
Is it?
No, it's over there.
No, no, yes.
There's a hydrant over there.
Okay.
Everything
should be good. Okay, so page 6 over here. Everybody's parked by the hydrant.
You're doing a great job, everyone.
Driving them out.
Okay, so here we go. Page 6, and here's where we're told a direct quote from Rabbi Tzadok. The Amar Rabbeinu Akadosh, Shehaya lo zeh ledavar chadash, kimashmo pshischa, v'achar kach matzah davar mefurash, bekama duchdi, v'lo perish lan I mekoman, aye mekoman, ukvar amarnu shorish lezeh. So our Holy Master told us that this was something new to him, and we had heard it in Peshiska, though we found the exact point explicitly explained in several places. He didn't tell me where the sources were. So what are we talking about? What's the source? Skip down to the next Hebrew, and then the English right underneath it. We'll just read the English for the sake of time. So as it is known, again, this is quoted from Rav Tzadok, whenever anyone understands any matter clearly, the light of that gate of knowledge becomes open to the world and is open to all. For this is the principle that God established for all the generations, even though they continually decline in ability. So here he's straddling the fence. On the one hand, we're told that there's Yuridas Adoros, that there's a decline. But on the other hand, he says that even though there's a decline, there's really no decline. Right? Even though there's a decline, we still, everybody in every generation has the option of getting this clarity. For once these lights are made available to every generation by the great ones among the sages of Israel, they are not sealed up. They remain open forever and become fixed laws for all Israel. Therefore, even though later generations are inferior to the earlier ones, they nevertheless maintain their awareness of knowledge as dwarfs on the shoulders of giants, and they themselves continue the process of this opening of new gates. So his point here is that, yes, there's a concept that we're not as good as everybody else, but practically, that's not limiting us. Practically, we can get insight and grow even further.
Instead of diminishing returns, though, so it is limiting.
But it's not diminishing returns. Keep reading. Read the last sentence here. And they themselves continue the process. Even though they themselves are greatly inferior in comparison to their forebearers, their insights are more profound. For they have already passed through the gates open for the earlier generations. So he's straddling a fence here. He's saying we do have a concept that they were greater than us, right? But, so what is that?
Dwarfs on the shoulders of giants.
I'm sorry.
But dwarfs on the shoulders of giants.
A dwarf on the shoulder of a giant doesn't have a more profound insight.
Well, that so
it may add to the body of knowledge, but it doesn't make it
more profound. You bring somebody from the 1900s and explain to them a cell phone. My little kid can understand it.
Your point is good.
They still aren't going to understand a cell phone.
And I think, and you could read the whole article, I'll give you the whole article to read. I think what the point here is that we have to sort of pay homage to the fact.
You pay lip service,
right?
So,
and then saying that. But that's why.
But it makes sense. Because the concept is so strong in the tradition.
No, but he's saying. But that's his point. He's backhanding. He's saying it's not so strong.
Right,
and what's really more important is that we can do better. Yes, because we have their chosim, but we can do more than they did. We can have more insight. We can have
better.
Because we have the benefit.
The benefit of what they
have. It's more profound.
Yeah, but we have more machlokes today.
Right. Okay. So in what way they're inferior? Because it's humility that we're looking back.
2,500 years ago, there was no machlokas in Allah.
Right, so the machlokas is a big part we're not going to get into, but he talks about why that's all relevant to the concept.
Any of the Rishonim and Achronim
back then,
because we knew what the Allah was.
Bracket that. It's part of the discussion, but we're not going to...
Right away.
We're not going to get with that now. But look... Here, so continuing, the commonplace of Western thought, that is the continual accretion and increase of knowledge in time, is radical in the context of Rabbinic Judaism. Right? There's a famous story about Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, I believe. He was on a plane, and his children, his grandchildren, were behaving so nicely and so beautifully, and there was somebody else sitting next to him. His grandkids were, weren't there, but I think he said, how do your grandkids behave so nicely? Why do they treat you so nicely? They're serving you. So I think Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's reply was that you believe that you descend, that we are evolving from apes, and because of that, okay, so you're stuck with all this bad behavior. But we are further away, from the, we look at the previous generations that they are closer to Sinai than we are, so therefore our kids respect the adults better, and we respect previous generations. So that's true, and there's this balance here that we respect previous generations because they're closer, but the kids have the ability then to transcend and to go further. So it's walking a tightrope, but what it's basically saying is that in terms of the psak that we can't do better, it's false. We could do better. Why could we do better? Not because we're so awesome, we're so amazing, we're so arrogant, but because of them. But that doesn't limit our abilities to continue to grow. And then he quotes some other sources here, and basically that sets the stage for understanding how Rav Tzadok's thought impacts Torah Shabbat. Tav and Torah Shabbat Peh, and what he calls the revelation of the Torah Shabbat Peh. So that's the starting point now for Professor Ellman. If you go now to back to that page that we skipped from Professor Kellner, so here he has, and we'll just do one or two sources from this. From this page, 13, it should 14? Say...
Is that 13-14?
Hold on, I got to start again. Yeah, 13-14. So on 13-14, and I'll do this more so you can look it on your own. We'll just pick one or two sources from here. Professor Kellner basically says that if you go back to the Gemara, you find that you have sources that indicate that we're better than previous generations and that we could do better than previous generations. So even in the Gemara that says, oh, how can you look at the previous generations? That's not everybody. That's not all opinions. Some opinions say that we're actually better than previous generations. And I'll just give you, let's do one for quickness sake. On the right-hand side, small little paragraph in the middle starts with once. Right. Once, when the rabbis were met in the upper chambers of Guria's house in Jericho, a bat kol was heard from heaven saying, there is one among you who is worthy that the Shechina should rest on him, as did on Moses. But his generation did not merit it. The sages present their eyes on Hillel the elder. So here you have again sort of this balance here. On the one hand, people can transcend. The generation itself didn't merit it, so it didn't happen. But he's good as Moshe. Right? So Moshe's not like in the past, can't be touched, impossible to connect with. You could be like Moshe Rabbeinu to some extent.
Not the
Nebuah part. But yeah, so go to the, we'll read the next quick source here in the next part where it says, it has been taught. Rabbi Yossi said, had Moses not preceded him, Ezra would have been worthy of receiving the Torah for Israel. Of Moses as it is written, and Moses went up to God, and Ezra is written, he Ezra went up for Babylon, as he's going up from the former first to receiving the Torah, so does going up to the latter. And the point, and he says that there's like, I think he says 12 sources or so that he can pull together that basically say, that there's some, you wouldn't be able to say this source if you believed we're automatically going downhill. You can't say that.
Actually, this proves it. It's actually just the opposite. But this is saying that yes, maybe one person was okay, but the generation wasn't. This specifically proves you do
it
to the Torah itself was not able to merit it. Hillel himself was like Moshe.
Right. So I want you to be careful. What you just did was exactly the point that I'm trying to make, not to do. Right? So what you... No. I think it's good because that's his point. His point is you went from reading the source to it bring up proof that it's impossible. At the very least, the source can be read in two different ways, but it doesn't have to be read
but that generation it doesn't does not merit it.
Right, but the proof is that Hillel could be this. Ezra could be this. And then if you go to the previous source, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai can be this.
Stop
and all
each
these
person.
It also doesn't talk about a Yerida. It just says that generation doesn't say the one before.
Right, and that's the point, because that's the mistake that everybody makes. Everybody looks into the 12 or 13 sources that he had that he quotes. We're not going to see all of them. But he says those 12 or 13 sources that say that you can read these sources in one of two ways. You can kvetch in, look, this shows Yerida Sadoros, or you can say, no, maybe there's no Yerida Sadoros. Maybe in some elements we go down. Maybe some generations were better than other generations, but the main point is that it's not a foregone conclusion that we're going downhill and that we have no chance at ascending and high spiritual levels. It's just not true. And then...
So the Mashiach problem.
Right, so here's the Mashiach problem. Go to... What's your Mashiach problem? So as Itai explains the Mashiach problem.
The problem is that there are two views of Mashiach, but there's the view where we have a development, especially around this view, we have a development in history, right, towards, you know, coming, you know, towards God and towards this ultimate revelation at the end. Right?
So Itai just stole the next part of the share. If you go to page, this is Professor Kalman's whole part of the whole thesis, and it's good because we can do it now quicker, and we'll just explain it. Page 74-75. So what Professor Kellner does is he basically lays out, and this is the thesis of the book, is that the Rambam could not have held that we're going downhill. And the Rambam, in the opposite, has to say that we have the potential to go uphill. And that's because the Rambam holds that Mashiach is a natural process of us developing more intellectual and perhaps moral capabilities that were not present in previous generations. So if you look quickly, he quotes some Rambams here, and go to the bottom right-hand part of page 75, last two paragraphs. Quite simply, for the messianic fulfillment to come about, a process of universal education will have to reach fruition, a process that depends upon no interruptions in the laws of nature or innovations in the natural world. Again, this is all based on the Rambam sources. Bringing the whole world to being preoccupied with nothing but the knowledge of God, bringing Jews to a particularly high level of that knowledge, can only happen through wide cooperation, hard work, and devoted study over decades, perhaps generations. Since in the days of the Messiah, no law of nature will be set aside and no innovation will be introduced into creation, this monotheization of the world must mark the culmination of a process which began before the Messiah's advent. The coming of the Messiah must mark the high point of human progress and ascent, not divine intervention to stave off ultimate degradation. As described in Laws of Kings, Maimonides' doctrine of messianism makes it absolutely impossible that he could have accepted the theory of the decline of the generations. And in simple terms, just repeating what Itai said, is that if you hold that Mashiach has to come from our own doing, from our own building, from our own progress, in contrast to people who hold that Mashiach is a miracle and it comes down from Hashem and there's no choice and it's only when we're so terrible and lost and we have no chance, then Mashiach's going to come. Okay, then you can say, we're just going to keep going until God saves us. But if you hold like the Rambam, that Mashiach's only coming once we build and we ascend and we continue to grow, then you can't hold that we're destined to continue to decline. It must be that we continue, or at least have the ability to ascend as well.
That would explain his statement in Mishneh Torah. You don't need to learn Gemara anymore, just learn Mishneh Torah, because he ascended.
Maybe. That's probably a separate discussion, but we'll leave that for now. Page 78 and 79, so flip the page. And here, just one more point on the Rambam that we're all familiar with that sort of proves the point, is this Rambam goes against the concept that everybody was so greater than we were in the beginning. Right? So we have this, and we have sources, and we can build a drush, and we can build a shir on why the generation of the Midbar was so awesome and amazing, and they saw prophecy like that more than Yechezkel, and they were so great at such a high level. But what does the Rambam say about the generation that left the desert? Is that they were basically idol worshippers who needed to die out before the next generation had a chance to go into Eretz Yisrael, right? So this is a total invert of, but it's the same point, is that we don't have to look back and say everybody was so much greater. We're actually developing and progressing over those generations. Yes, we're learning from their mistakes, we're learning from what they did wrong, but we have the ability to stand on their shoulders and look forward and continue to progress as well. So if you read pages 78 and 79, we're just for the sake of time, you can read it on your own, but he quotes this idea that the generation from the desert basically were idol worshippers. Then he says that it must be, one paragraph, page 79, first full paragraph, right over where it says 5, smicha and later courts. So the last paragraph before that says, individual human beings have developed spiritually to the point where they can truly worship God through intellectual meditation. Eventually, as we have seen in our discussion of messianism, Maimonides holds that all human beings will reach the point where the devout, that where they devote themselves to nothing but the knowledge of the Lord. Here too we see that Maimonides expects humanity to achieve even greater levels of spirituality, not the reverse. And there's tons of other sources, and there's a whole book on this concept that he wrote. We're not going to go to everything, but just know.
Does he address the end of prophecy?
The end of prophecy? Yeah, the Rambam, I mean, there's a whole thing. The Rambam probably held that you could be a prophet.
But in the book he addresses it.
Right. I don't remember what page. But
the fact is that there haven't been any.
Right, and there's a whole chapter where he delves to the Rambam explaining the decline in the Rambam, where the Rambam basically says his own generation, he yells at all the you know, pulpit rabbis and all the, you know, everybody who's not doing a good job. And, you know, so there is this concept that, yes, we're not living up to it at this point, and hence Mashiach hasn't come yet, right? But there's but in terms of a philosophy of whether or not we're automatically going down, no. Are we going down? Maybe. You could argue that we are. But we don't have to be.
In other words, it's not a rule. It's just a reality.
It might be a reality.
Well,
right?
Is it a reality that takes place if you don't do it totality?
Okay, so here's the next part that I think was essential to Professor Elman's thought, and that is this book, Steven Pinker, The Better Angels of Our Nature. At the funeral,
yes,
you quoted your brother,
right,
who said that this was their favorite book.
Yeah.
And in class, he quoted this book also. This is when my mind started churning for this idea. So Steven Pinker's a psychologist, and he likes to write big fat books on heavy topics. He does not repeat himself. He just quotes lots and lots of stuff. He has to be a good writer. He even has a book on how to write effectively using the psychology of, you know, using cognitive science to show you how to write, you know, good prose and all that stuff. I have that downstairs too. So in The Better Nature, in The Better Angels of Our Nature, which is a quote from Abraham Lincoln, he basically argues the whole, and if you look, I gave you a Wikipedia handout on the next page of a summary of the book. He basically argues the same exact concept of the Shear, that there's this concept out there in the Welt that, you know, things are getting worse, that everybody is more violent, and everything's just like, we're just such a bad generation, or we're in a bad spot.
Fake news.
And he basically says it's fake news based on tons and tons and tons of statistics and data, and to some certain extent everybody would agree with this when you just go back to the Middle Ages, and you go back to before, and you go back to all the, you know, think about all the movies and TV shows about everybody killing each other and, you know, raping each other and, you know, just constant crazy violence and hostility towards each other. And he quotes, and he has chapters on each one of these, and lots of charts. If you look quickly, you know, there's lots of charts about how the data shows that it's just not true. That yes, the world's not perfect. Yes, there's lots of violence that exists, but as a whole, we're actually becoming more moral than we were 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, and, you know, 10,000 years ago, or whatever, how far you want to go back, in his calculations. You know, when you look at Neanderthals, his old chapter on that, whatever. Either way, that's not the point for now. But his point is that he goes through the data and shows that we're actually getting better. And one of the things here, actually, you have it in front of you. So look in the outlines of the book. Page page 2 of 12. So you can read a little bit before that if you want on your own. But where it says outline of the book, he says here, the first section of the book, chapters 2 through 7, seeks to demonstrate and to analyze historical trends related to declines of violence on different scales. Chapter 8 discusses five inner demons, which are psychological systems that can lead to violence. Those are our bad midos. Chapter 9 examines four better angels, our good midos, or motives that can incline people away from violence. And the last chapter examines the five historical forces listed above that have led to decline in violence. So it's a historical book, it's a data, it's a psychology book, it's a statistics book, and it's also a book about how our, again, I'll just use the word midos, how our character has evolved to the point now that it was different than 500 years ago and 200 years ago and 300, and there's different historical markers as to why that is. Again, we're not going to go into the details, but you have it here spelled out for you: the pacification process, the civilizing process, the humanitarian revolution, and then if you flip the page, you have the long peace, the new peace, the rights revolution. Everybody's about human rights and equality, and that's all part of how we are evolving, according to Steven Pinker, to be less violent. The Enlightenment is a big part of this. And then he talks about, in the five inner demons by chapter 8, he talks about predatory or practical violence. These are things that why people do bad. Dominance, revenge, sadism, ideology, those are all reasons why people are violent towards each other. But then in the hopeful part of chapter 9 here is that Pinker, this is the second half of the bottom half of the page, Four Better Angels, chapter 9, Pinker examines four motives that can orient humans away from violence and toward cooperation and altruism. He identifies empathy, self-control, the moral sense, and reason. And all four of these things have been increasing over time so that people are less violent and more nice to each other. Again, it doesn't mean that everybody's going to, even when you argue on Facebook. You're arguing on Facebook. You're not taking a knife and stabbing. No, it doesn't mean there's no violence. It doesn't mean that doesn't happen. It happens. But the fact that every time you hear about it, it's news, is great because it's great. But it shows that it's changed. It shows that it's not happening as often as it used to be. And interesting, that last point about reason is parallel. Again, we would have to do a real analysis of what he says versus what the Rambam says. But he's basically saying using your reason, using your intellectual capability, we can do better, and we are doing better. And the trends are, there's something called the Flynn effect, which basically shows that over the past 75 years, people have increased as a whole, generations have gotten smarter on IQ tests. And one of the explanations is that, yes, we're actually getting smarter as people. As a human race, not everybody, but as a human race, we're getting smarter. And part of that getting smarter, he argues, is actually showing that there's some morality to that. And I think the Rambam would agree to that, that with reason comes morality as well. Not every philosopher would agree to that, but that's what Pinker argues. And now just to pull it all together and to tie it back into Professor Ellman at the end here, go to the last page that you have in the source sheet. I'll just point out to you that Professor Lamb, Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb, in Toru Mada, Jake, you should remember this, in Toru Mada, you don't have this in your source sheet, but we went through Toru Mada a few years ago back in the Sunday morning shiur. So he has a whole section on...
Laser,
you don't remember?
Laser
remembers everything. He's just being humble. So he has a chapter here on what he calls the degeneration of generations, where he argues from his standpoint, the whole point of Toru Mada as a book is to show that there is a concept that we can learn from Torah and, you know, a broader philosophy, science, math, etc. And one of the arguments against Toru Mada is, you know, oh, we can't do it because it's too difficult, or it's going to make us not from, or, you know, okay, so what about the Rambam? Oh, the Rambam's special. Again, that argument. The Rambam's different, right? So when he goes, he jumps off of that and spends, you know, 10 or 12 pages or so explaining why he thinks that it's wrong also. Similar to what Professor Kellner did, but in a little bit of a different style and with a little bit of a different point. But his end goal is to show that, no, we're not getting worse. And you can't just say the Rambam did it, we're so bad, so we can't do it. No, you can learn Torah Mada too. You could be a frum Jew in the outside world and be a Torah scholar and have knowledge of the secular world. That's possible. So that was Rabbi Lamb's perspective. But I just want to end off with Professor Ellman's perspective. This is on one of the latest things. I don't know if it's the last thing. I know you guys told me that he still has things that they're going to publish. They're still, you know, on the computer and manuscript.
All this and more.
I can't
believe what you're talking about. I have no idea this is what you're talking about.
Okay.
In the middle of editing that last.
So he's writing something on this?
No. Another article's come in.
I did not know that. Okay.
I should have known. I would have wrote it. But he's
next time.
Going through Maharal, Rav and Rav Huttner, and how they all...
Okay. There you go. So the Maharal's interesting. Professor Kellner quotes the Maharal as being sort of the starting point of those who say that we are so much worse off than we were in the times of the Tanaim and the Amoraim, which is interesting because usually, and this is the progression, usually goes Maharal, you know, and then Rav Tzadok pulls from the Maharal and Rav Huttner pulls from Rav Tzadok, but here it sounds like, you know, that they totally go in a different direction. So even though the Maharal says that we're going downhill, Rav Tzadok can't say that because of what we said in the beginning of his concept of Torah Shebaal Peh, and so getting to Rav Huttner. So this is taken from this book, Books of the People, which was put out, I believe, in 2016 or 17, a few years ago.
Hanukkah
wasn't last year. Okay. So edited by Dr. Stuart Halpern. It's a great book. Actually, bought one for the shul, so it's going to be in the shul library at some point, and dedicated in memory of Professor Ellman. So he wrote an article on Rav Huttner. And in the article on Rav Huttner, so if you read, you have page here 304, 305, and then on the back you have 306 and 307. So in 304 and 305, he basically starts giving you a background to who Rav Huttner was and who his teachers were and how difficult it is to sort of grasp and put explanations to Rav Huttner because he doesn't quote sources and he's basically quoting halacha and philosophy, Jewish philosophy. He's not quoting secular philosophy, but the argument here, if you read it on your own, is that it was in the background to some extent. He was holding, not that I'm saying he read it necessarily, but he was holding in philosophical concepts. He was a student of Rav Kook, and then Heimberlin went a little bit more to the right, and he talked a little bit about that. And then if you go to the bottom right of 305, last paragraph, nor were his Hasidic interests free of controversy. So Rav Huttner was part Litvak, part Hasid. So I well remember the critical eye that was cast by outsiders on the question of whether he was a Lithuanian Rosh Yeshiva or Hasidic Rebbe. In truth, he was both, and his expansive intellect and personality could encompass both roles. But in his Ma'amarim discourses, he was first and foremost an educator, well aware of the limits of his audience. And now flip the page. This is the last paragraph we're going to do. In sum, read this carefully. Though Pachad Yitzchak presents a view of Judaism, optimistic, expansive, world-embracing, quite different from the quote-unquote circle-the-wagons policy of much of the Orthodox world, in which humanity, Jews included, degenerates from generation to generation, and we are bidden only to hold on to the past and resist the future. Rav Huttner's view presents the world as the sitter does, praising the Creator who renews and revivifies his creation daily. He understood that by presenting such a negative view of humanity, we impugn God's creation and governance of that creation. It's very powerful. By you saying that we're getting worse off, you're basically calling God into question. You're calling God into question. This was his outlook, and I think that his outlook was informed by, and I guess we'll see the article, but was informed by looking at the world and saying we're getting better morally. And I think that, you know, he wouldn't say this about himself, but I think we can look at him and say, I firmly believe that we're not getting worse if we have people like him who are just intellectual and moral geniuses, and I can't say that there's I can't even imagine there being a qualitative difference between him and somebody from generations past. We're not going downhill. There's hope. We can do better and we can grow, and, you know, tying that into the Rambam, that's the view of Mashiach, and tying that into Rav Huttner, and this circles all the way back to Rav Tzadok, this has to be our world view, otherwise it doesn't make any sense. How are we getting worse? Just give up hope, throw in the towel, God's going to save us one day? That's not what we believe in. We believe in, not that you can't present and, you know, attract that way, but you know, Professor Ellman didn't believe in, we're getting worse. We're getting better, and we can do better, and God created this world for us to get better, and with that, we hope that we can continue to build off the shoulders of giants, not that we're so amazing and they were bad. We can build off of them, and with the hope that we can bring Mashiach as soon as possible, and with Tehillat Hamason, we could all join together, Rabbi Abaye and Professor Ellman, and we can ask them what's going on and who is right in all of these arguments. Thank you. Rabbi Hanan ben Akash, Moros Kosh Baruch Hu Zakos.